I want to read this because while we're talking about joy, it's always set in this contrast to fear and to violence and to judgment and all of these other big things. And Zephaniah was a prophet in Israel, and he was a prophet who most of his book is not joyful. Most of it is hard stuff to read, which is why we hardly ever read it in churches. And we just focus at the very end where we finally get introduced to joy. But I wanted us to start where it starts. And in verse 2, it introduces itself in verse 1. In verse 2, listen to this. This is God speaking. And God says, I will utterly sweep away everything from the face of the earth, says the Lord. Well, that's a way to start a book, don't you think? Think about all the great literature you've ever read. And did any of them start that dire? I will utterly sweep away everything from the face of the earth, says the Lord. And in case you're not sure what the everything includes, I will sweep away humans and animals. I will sweep away the birds of the air and the fish of the sea. I will make the wicked stumble. I will cut off humanity from the face of the earth, says the Lord. Oh, Merry Christmas. Happy Advent. You know, before Advent got known as being this time of waiting, this time where we focus on things like hope and peace and joy and love, the focus was on judgment. The focus was on the coming judgment. When Christ returns, there will be judgment over the whole earth. And so books and prophets like Zephaniah were included quite a bit, but not the happy, joyful stuff at the end, but this stuff. I'll sweep away everything. If you jump down to verse 17 of the first chapter, I will bring such distress upon people that they shall walk like the blind because they have sinned against the Lord. Their blood shall be poured out like dust and their flesh like dung. Neither their silver nor their gold will be able to save them on the day of the Lord's wrath. In the fire of his passion, the whole earth shall be consumed for a terrible end he will make of all the inhabitants of the earth. Whew. You know, sometimes also we read the prophets and we think that they're very specific to the nation of Israel, the ancient nation of Israel. Only here, Zephaniah starts his entire first chapter, and there's only 3 chapters in this book. The entire first chapter is all about the horrible end that will come to all creation, to all of humanity. I will utterly sweep away everything from the face of the earth. It kind of makes a sound like Noah, right? When the flood came and it washed away all of everybody, because the sin and the evil was so bad that God had just had it. It reads like that. I don't know if it reads like that to you, but it reads like that to me, that God is saying, I'm done. I'm done with the whole lot of you. All of you with your evil, all of you with your turning to other gods, all of you who are mean to each other, who oppress people, all of you who don't share the food that you have, who don't share the resources that you have, all of you who can't be bothered to help the person that fell down the stairs, all of you. I'm done with the lot of you. I'm going to sweep it away clean. And not just you, but everybody and everything. I'm done. And this is the stuff we don't really talk about, at least in our typical Walmart services. I don't talk a lot about, you know what, Jesus is going to come back. And when he does, he's going to destroy everything you and I concluded. When I was learning how to preach, one of the golden rules that my preaching prof gave us was, it's really important that when you preach, by the time you're done, people have hope. People should never go home from church and just want to die. Your preaching should bring hope. And so let's preach from Zephaniah. I will bring such distress upon people. Their blood will be poured out like the dust and their flesh like dung. These are hard words. These are harsh words. This is an idea of a God. We talk about God who is love, but this is a God of wrath. This is a God of judgment. This is the kind of God that sometimes when we're really angry at people, we want to go, God, we want that God to rain down terror upon this enemy of ours, or on this person, or on this country, or on this leader, whoever it is that we really, really hate at the moment. And then he moves and he starts talking specifically to his people, to his chosen people, the nation of Israel, the city of Jerusalem. And in chapter 3, when we jump ahead to chapter 3, he begins by addressing them, "Woe, soiled, defiled, oppressing city." Oh, he is mad at them. Imagine God was speaking to Toronto. What would he say? Would he start the same way? "Woe, soiled, defiled, oppressing city." How would we hear those words if they were spoken to us today in our city? "Woe, soiled, defiled, oppressing city." And it goes on a few verses later, "Therefore wait for me, says the Lord." Oh, well, that's very Advent-y. Advent is about waiting. Wait for the Lord for the day when I arise as a witness. Okay, well, wait for God. "For my decision is to gather nations, to assemble kingdoms, to pour out upon them my indignation, all the heat of my anger. For in the fire of my passion, all the earth shall be consumed." This is a God we don't talk so much about. This is the God of wrath, of anger. This is a God before whom we cower in fear. This is a God before whom we hide our face because we don't want to see him. This is the kind of God that the people of Israel knew. Moses went up a mountain and had great conversations with God one-on-one and got this kind of great intimate knowledge of him. But when he came down, there was this sense of that we're told the glory of God resided on him. But he was glowing. He was so impacted by the presence of God that the people didn't want to be in his presence, never mind God's presence. And when he said, "Hey, here's this holy place, this tabernacle, and you can come and you can speak directly to God. God resides here. You can hear from him. You can talk to him." They went, "Nope, thanks. You do that, and then just come back and tell us what he said." Why? Because they knew a God of wrath, a God of judgment, a God to be feared. And we've tended to go the other way. And we kind of go, "There's nothing to fear about God. He loves you. It's lovely. He loves you. Nothing bad could possibly happen. What could go wrong?" And we've turned God into almost an impotent Buddy, there's an old movie refers to Buddy Jesus, where God is lost. There's no judgment left. There's no wrath. There's nothing to fear in God. God is like this benevolent being who only ever wants to do good things and give good things. And there's no real discipline there or anything like that. But the Bible has a lot of wrath, has a lot of judgment, has all of this. And when Zephaniah was speaking to the people of Israel, people who had wandered way far away from the ways of God, to the world that had followed way far away, these were the kind of things that God had to say to them. "I'm going to wipe you off the face of the earth. I'm done. I've had it with the lot of you. You will be reminded again that I am God and you are but the creatures." Oh, you're going to go home filled with hope, aren't you? This is lovely. Advent, waiting for God, the light in the darkness, or Advent, waiting for God, the judge who would come and wipe us off the face of the planet. But see, Zephaniah doesn't end there. God doesn't end there with these horrendous, awful, fear-inspiring words. When we move on, he says this in verse 11, chapter 3, verse 11. "On that day," this is, he's speaking to the people of Israel. He says, "On that day, you shall not be put to shame because of all the deeds by which you have rebelled against me. For then, even though you've rebelled against me, even though you've done all of these things, for then I will remove from your midst your proudly exultant ones," the ones who are all bragging and are all this, "and you shall no longer be haughty in my holy mountain," you filled with pride and arrogance. "For I will leave in the midst of you a people humble and lowly." In other words, I'm not going to wipe everybody out. I'm not going to destroy everybody. They shall seek refuge in the name of the Lord, the remnant of Israel. And let me say, when we read the Old Testament, it's very much speaking to the nation of Israel, and we can feel separated from that, divorced from, oh, Israel way over there. He's going to leave the remnant of Israel. But the Apostle Paul teaches us that we who are followers of Jesus have become, we've been adopted into that chosen nation of Israel. The word Israel no longer means, for us in Christianity, in biblical terms, is no longer a geographical set place in the world. It is all of those who follow God, all of those who belong to God, who God calls his children, amongst whom we are included. And so you shall no longer be haughty in my holy mountain, verse 12, for I will leave in the midst of you a people humble and lowly. They shall seek refuge in the name of the Lord, the remnant of Israel, which is us. They shall do no wrong and utter no lies. Nor shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouths. Then they will pasture and lie down, and no one shall make them afraid. We've just had 2.5 chapters of nothing but fear. And then here he goes, don't worry. You won't be put to shame. I'm going to take care of all of the everything that's wrong. But what will be left, you'll remember who I am. You won't experience shame because I won't give you shame to carry upon your shoulders. You will have rest. You won't be afraid. See, here's the thing. Often we read these judgment things in the prophets and we think, oh, he's talking to absolutely everybody. And he kind of is talking to absolutely everybody. But there's this setting right that happens, this setting right that's promised with the coming of Jesus, when Jesus returns, that all of those who are doing the oppressing, all of those who are doing the violence and the hate and all of this, those who are oppressed will be freed from that. The shame that is heaped upon their heads will be removed from that. It reminds me of the Beatitudes. This reminds me of the Beatitudes are something that Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5. Jesus said a series of these things that probably sound familiar to you. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. In other words, God is saying, yes, there's going to be wrath. There's going to be judgment. There's going to be all of this. And in the ways of Noah and the flood, I'm going to wipe out everything that is unclean, everything that is anti-God. And what is going to be left is this beautiful, sweet, perfect, reconciled creation, people who the world maybe looks down on, but God does not. So in the midst of all this lament, in the midst of all this sadness, there can be joy. And that's where we get when we get to Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 14. And the prophet ends with these words, "Sing aloud, O daughter Zion," which is a way of referring to Israel, to Jerusalem. "Shout, O Israel. Rejoice and exult with all your heart, O daughter Jerusalem." It's hard to hear those words coming out of like two and a half chapters of like all this wrath and judgment talk. But this is where the prophet gets us. He says, okay, yes, all of this. However, sing, shout, rejoice, exult, because the Lord has taken away the judgments against you. Here's so important. It's not like there is no judgment against you. He's not saying, hey, you haven't done anything wrong either. You're just the victims. He's saying the Lord has taken away the judgments against you. The judgments are just, but God has said, I am going to take them away. This is the story of Jesus. Jesus didn't come and go, okay, well, we're just going to save the good people, and we're just going to take the people who don't really do a lot of bad stuff. And they're the ones that get to be the remnant, the ones that remain, all of that. No, God says, I'm going to send Jesus, and he's going to take all of the guilt, all of the judgment upon himself, so that you can be freed from that. And this is what Zephaniah is saying as well. The Lord has taken away the judgments against you. He has turned away your enemies. He's saying, surprise, all of this is true, but also God shows mercy and God shows grace upon you. That's what God chooses. With all of the wrath, with all of the, I'm so done with a lot of you, God says, nevertheless, nevertheless, mercy, grace, I will take away the judgments. I will turn away your enemies. The King of Israel, the Lord is in your midst, and you shall fear disaster no more. We don't have to be afraid of those horrible things written in the prophets, because God says, you shall fear disaster no more. On that day, it shall be said to Jerusalem, do not fear, O Zion. Do not let your hands grow weak. The Lord your God is in your midst, a warrior who gives victory. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will renew you in his love. He will exult over you with loud singing as on a day of festival. I will remove disaster from you so that you will not bear reproach for it. I will deal with all your oppressors at that time, and I will save the lame and gather the outcast, and I will change their shame into praise and renown in all the earth. At that time, I will bring you home, at that time when I gather you, for I will make you renowned and praised among all the people of the earth when I restore your fortunes before your eyes, says the Lord. Oh, that's an about face from what came at the beginning, wasn't it? All of those fear of judgment, all of that wrath talk, all of that gets turned into praise. In Psalm 30, your mourning gets turned into joy, which we read earlier. This is what's happening. This is what our God does. He says, yes, I should inspire fear. I should inspire trepidation, because I am God and I can wipe you out with a snap of my fingers. I can just go, I'm done with you. We're going to start over again and clear the slate and start over again. God could do that. And not one of us would be able to look God in the eye and say, well, not me, because I'm not like them. I'm perfect, God. I always only worship you. I always live a sinless life. There's nothing that tempts me away from you. Every moment of every day is all about you in my life, God. That's not true of any of us. All of us could fall under that judgment and that wrath and be afraid. But that's why it's so important what Zephaniah says. Nevertheless, mercy, grace, I have taken away the judgments against you. You don't have to feel shame. I've turned away your enemies, even if you are your own worst enemy. The Lord your God is in your midst, not to be feared, but as a warrior who gives great victory, who will rejoice over you with gladness, who will renew you in your love. Think about this for a moment. When the day comes and you get to stand before the throne of God and you stand before God, what do you think? Is he going to look at you and go, oh, you are a tough one to love, but, well, come on in. No, you might be a tough one to love, but that's not how God's going to see you. God's going to look at you and go, oh, I'm so glad you're here. I know things were rough. I know sometimes things went wrong. I know you made bad decisions, but let me tell you that my love overcomes all of that. All of that just shrinks away. It shrivels, it dissolves in the warmth and the light of my incredible love for you. My child, I'm so glad that you're here. My child, I'm so glad that you get to be with me for all eternity. My child, I'm so glad that you discovered Jesus. I'm so glad that you discovered the freedom that comes when you can take all of that guilt, all of that shame, and hand it over to Jesus and let it be over there. Because I love you so much. I'm so glad to have you. And I think sometimes, occasionally, when we show up in a place like this and we sing a particular song or we have a conversation with somebody, sometimes we get a glimpse of that, don't we? We get a little sense for a moment maybe of, there's no shame that I need to carry. Because even though I could, even though it's all justified, God has taken it. God himself, the divine judge, has said, I'm taking this away from you. I am releasing you from this. I have turned away your enemies. I have taken away the judgments against you. You can stand tall. You can stand proud. You can smile and you can laugh. Even when things are hard, know this, that your loved by me is unquestionable. It's never going to go away. God's not going, as long as you keep it together, then you're good, then we'll be good. But you better always be on guard because this God of wrath is waiting in the wings to smite you. No, he's always like, remember that cross? That's where your shame went. It was crucified. It was dead. Remember all that guilt you carry. It was crucified. It's dead. It's gone. Jesus took it. Don't take it back. Jesus took it. This is the joy that comes in the morning. This is the joy that Advent promises. Even in the midst of the lament, even in the midst of all of the fear and the judgment and the wrath of God that may come when Jesus returns, we know that the thing that wipes out all of that wrath is the extraordinary love that God has for us. Love beyond our ability to even imagine. Love that's bigger than the biggest sea, higher than the highest star. That's what Christmas reminds us. It's the beginning, not really a beginning, but a beginning of the story of God going, yep, I'm done with a lot of you. I want to wipe you out, but I'm not going to because I can't possibly because I love you so much. We all have people in our lives who at times we would like to just see wiped out. People we love. But the love is stronger. The love is always stronger. The light is always stronger than the darkness. Can we hold on to that? Can we hold on to that? One commentator said, the world is a total mess. But though the people of God have failed God, God will pull them through. God will always pull us through. He has taken away the judgments against you. Let's live in the freedom of that, in the joy of that truth. And if you can't believe that quite yet, let me know so I can be praying for you, because I know that that truth is true. It's not very eloquent, but it's the absolute truth. It's the gospel. It's the good news.